But first, as we heard earlier, the G20 finance ministers and central bank governors have set this ambitious target to boost global growth over the next 5 years. The meeting held in Sydney over the weekend pledged to do more to prevent global tax evasion by roaming multinational companies, but it made no progress on giving developing economies more say in the International Monetary Fund. Tim Harcourt is an international trade expert and an economics lecturer at the University of New South Wales. And with me is our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell, to speak with him. Hey, Cheryl.
Tim Harcourt, good morning.
G'day, Cheryl. Good to be with you.
Look, as Treasurer Joe Hockey says, the G20 has finally put a number on growth. Countries representing 85% of the global economy have pledged to lift growth by a further 2 percentage points over the next 5 years. So how significant an achievement was that commitment in your view?
Well, I think before the summit, people were saying, like in the castle, telling me he's dreaming. So it was quite something for Hockey to go out there and put a number on it, and he's managed to convince the others to go with him. So that's a reasonably significant achievement in its own right.
But wouldn't governments, by definition, want to lift growth and job creation in their countries? I mean, why does it need to be spelled out in a communique as such?
Well, I think in many ways it changes the psychology of recovery. I mean, things are still pretty fragile out there, and even though the US has done better and China's slump hasn't come as some expected, I think if you put out a target, even a stretch target, you're more likely to change the psychology of the global recovery. I remember a lot of economists will remember in the 90s the Prices and Incomes Accord asking for 500,000 jobs and a 5% unemployment rate by the end of the decade, and that was considered an outrageous target at the time. But of course, we started to achieve those low unemployment levels by the time the end of the decade came.
So you think it sort of applies a bit of peer pressure on members of the G20?
Yeah, and also a bit of aspiration. I think if you know there's a target out there that we have to reach, then there'll probably be a bit more of a concerted effort for recovery, and probably it'll be a bit more believable in the markets if people signed up to it.
Well, as you know, there's a lot of cynics about these out there, about these expensive talk fests. They say, they come up with motherhood statements that are soon forgotten when the finance ministers go home and return to their own domestic agendas. Just on the G20, I mean, what is its track record in delivering on its promises?
Well, it's pretty early days yet, but I think it changes the balance of power economically in a way. It's significant that both the G20 leaders' meetings and the APEC, organisation, were an invention of Australia and South Korea. So I think in a world traditionally dominated by the US and Europe in institutions like the IMF and World Bank, the G20 does give middle powers a go. It does give the Asia Pacific a bit of a go, and it brings in countries like South Korea and Australia and Brazil to play a bit of a role in global economic management and policy making.
Just on that target of 2 percentage points added to growth over the next 5 years, how achievable do you think that is for the global economy at this point in time?
I think it's pretty achievable in a lot of the emerging markets. I think it's quite hard in the US and Europe. Japan's pretty early days because Abenomics has seemed to have had an impact in Japan in the short term. The question arising, particularly as you get out of Tokyo into places like Kansai and Osaka, is to what extent is it flowing through? So that's a bit of a question mark, I think.
But it seems like the G20 is betting that we are on the brink of a global economic recovery, perhaps led by the US.
Well, I think from what Janet Yellen was saying at the summit and some of the other commentators, things are a lot better than they had expected 6 months ago, 12 months ago. Even the Reserve Bank has said that in its statement, so we're in the right direction. But again, 2%, it's a big ask.
The meeting, though, didn't seem to address one issue that I guess could boost global growth significantly, and that's how to get multinational trade talks back on track. Was that a disappointment to you?
Yeah, that was a surprise. I would have thought that, the WTO is as dead as a Doha. We're not making much progress formally, and given that the G20 is a nice mix of developing countries and different regions in the world, there could have been a little bit more focus on using trade as a bit of an engine of growth to make that target, particularly when we haven't had a major multilateral round for some time, and we're very much reliant on these bilateral trade agreements like the one between Korea and Australia again, just announced recently by Minister Robb.
There was a commitment, though, to support the OECD's so-called BEPS plan, which aims to stop multinationals like Google and Apple from avoiding paying tax on profits in the country that they're earned. Instead, many of them are moving these profits to lower taxed countries.
A bit like Bono, too, with you too.
Yes, exactly. Do you think, though, that this commitment goes far enough? And, I mean, do you think in this age of global digital commerce that tax evasion like this can ever be stopped?
Well, you'd welcome it to some extent in principle. The OECD hasn't got any rulemaking authority, really. You know, they found that out with their multilateral agreement on investment. They can't do much, but they can suggest things. So perhaps being very public about it would make Google and some of these organisations perhaps a little bit more publicly spirited. But, I think you're right. I don't think there's any enforcement, even with Bono.
Speaking of Bono, I mean, did poorer members of the G20 get much out of the meeting?
Oh, I think that they're there, and I think that there was a large chunk of the analysis on what's going to happen with the emerging economies as the US tapering comes off means people consider that. But, the G20, is, of course, not the whole world and certainly not the whole developing world.
Just finally, I mean, the G20 meeting did give our Treasurer, Joe Hockey, a platform to promote his strong view that the only way forward to achieve growth is for governments to embark on often controversial structural reforms. Was this a message aimed at his domestic audience only, or do you think it might have resonated with the international economic community as represented by the G20 finance ministers?
Well, I think both. I think treasurers and prime ministers do use international forum, particularly on their home deck, to use domestic policies that they're advocating. But for the most part, I think Joe Hockey talking about growth and flexibility is not an unusual message for any of the G20 ministers, but certainly he's got a big audience when he's at home.
Okay, I'll leave it there. Thanks very much, Tim Harcourt.
Thanks, Sarah. Great pleasure, Cheryl.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you, Tim. Tim Harcourt, the trade expert, New South Wales University economist, speaking with our business editor, Cheryl Bagwell. And Tim Harcourt's also the author of the book, The Airport Economist.